Hello everyone, welcome to this episode of Blog Red Machine Podcast. I got a few things that we're going to cover, like we always do. First of all, let's take a little bit of a look back over April. And got to come away feeling that good guys were a little fortunate walking away with an 11-11 record, considering the extended period without the bats being awakened. Just to dissect the record just a little bit, and all these stats that I'm about to give you can be found on our stats page on blogredmachine.com. They were 7-5 at home, 4-6 on the road. This just goes to show you how crazy of a game it can be against righties. That started 7-7, lefties 4-4. So it can't get any more diverse or lack of diverse than that. 6-6 in the division, just to make it look a little even worse. But where the Reds were making their hay a little bit was against those teams that were under 500. They were 6-3. Against the teams that were 500 or over, they were 5-8. They did manage to win the last three series of the month of April against the Cubs, the Giants, and the Astros. They were 6-3. And just to play a little bit of hopeful wishing here, that 667 winning percentage, which we know is somewhat stupendous, the Reds could manage to do that for the remaining 140 games, meaning they would go 93-47 in those games and end the season 104-58. That would also be mind-boggling. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter or on the Reds Facebook page or saw it on television. Jay Bruce was named the NL Player of the Week. And one of the things that we've come to know about Jay over the past few years is that he can be a little streaky with the bat. And the first month of the season just totally defined that. You look at the Reds' first six games, which were at home, then look at the middle 10 games, which were on the road, then the final six games of the month, and you'll see why. For the first six games, the three games against the Marlins, the three games against the Cards, he hit 3-4 with three homers and six runs batted in. On the 10-game road trip, he played in nine of those games, hit 189, no homers, and only one RBI. And these last six games, the three against the Giants, three against the Astros, 476, four home runs, including a homer in the last four games, something he had never done, and 10 RBIs. Put that all together, away from Great American, 189, no homers, one RBI, at Great American, Bruce is hitting 386, seven home runs, 16 RBI, and with all those home runs, he is slugging. At Great American Ballpark, his slugging percentage is .932. Absolutely, absolutely astounding. If you look at the Reds' offensive leaders, Bruce leads the team in the triple crown categories. He's got the seven home runs. He's got the 17 RBIs. He's got a .296 average. Now, if you look at our stats page, you'll notice that Devin Mesoraco has a higher batting average, but it would not qualify due to the amount of bats or plate appearances that he has. In fact, Ryan Hannigan has more, which is why he's listed with the starters versus those on the bench. Drew Stubbs leads the team in stolen bases with four. Oddly enough, Jay Bruce is second with three stolen bases. Now, for all the good that Jay Bruce has shown, well, at least at home anyway, for the month of April, same can be said of a couple of individuals on the pitching staff. I touched upon the post yesterday that, and to an extent, the bullpen production so far this year has been a bit overshadowed because of all the expectations placed on the starting rotation. Well, Matt Latos has struggled since coming over from San Diego. But one thing that we should make a mention of, and staff writer Matt Garris pointed out today, Matt Latos historically does poor in the month of April. In fact, it's his worst month. After his outing yesterday for the month of April during his career, he is now 2-8 with a 5.73 ERA and a WHIP of 1.472. For 2010, that was a 1-2 record, 6.20 ERA, 1.475 WHIP. Last year, he was 0-4 in April, a 4.98 ERA and a 1.338 WHIP. Those numbers right there should tell you how anemic the Padres' offense was. His ERA and his WHIP was lower than it was in 2010, but yet he got a win in 2010, and he went winless in 2011. And for his first month with the Reds, he's 1-2, 5.97 ERA, and a 1.570 WHIP. So, of course, people are hollering, especially those that didn't like the deal from the get-go, that, you know, it was a deal that Walt Jocketty should not have done. But I do point this out. May is one of Latos' strongest, if not the strongest, month in his career. For the month of May in 2010-2011 combined, Latos is 7-3 with a 2.41 ERA and a 1.009 WHIP. We will know probably his next start, which should be the middle game of the series at PNC Park, which is a bit more of a pitcher's park than what Great American Ballpark is, by the way. I'll touch on that in a minute. We thought we got a clue in on his last start. We want to get San Francisco. But there's no question to me that he might have been just a tick amped up for that one because it was against the Giants. And for some that think, you know, he throws too many fly balls to pitch at Great American, I got thinking about that because he is pretty much more of a fly ball than a ground ball pitcher. Is he maybe possibly trying to be a little too meticulous at such, making sure that the ball stays down versus staying up? Now, line drives are line drives. You know, and we know at Great American that every once in a while those line drives will translate into a home run, but maybe that there's just too much, thinking too much, potentially, more than anything, although I can't say for sure. Something that I touched upon the other day is the trending of one Mike Leake. He did not have himself a great April either. And that's kind of odd because that's a bit of a reverse trend than what we saw, what we've seen with Matt Latos. The last 2 years, Mike Leake has had some pretty good Aprils. His rookie year of 2010, he was 2-0 with a 3.25 ERA, although his WHIP was a little on the high side at 1.410. That was his rookie year, and if my memory serves me correct, he didn't make a start till about halfway through the month either. Last season, Leake was 3-0, 4.40 ERA, but the WHIP was lower to 1.207. If you look at what his record is for this April, he was 0-3 with a 6.65 ERA and a 1.569 WHIP. It's almost the highest WHIP, which when I wrote that about Leake the other day, trending in the wrong direction, his WHIP was actually higher than Matt Latos at the time. Something that we don't want to forget, prior to the season beginning, Sports Illustrated's Tom Verducci had Leake on what he calls his red flag list, I believe is what he calls it. Pitchers that had the previous season pitched 20% more innings than what they had the season before. And Link falls into that category. In fact, he pitched a lot more innings last year, percentage-wise, than what he had done in the previous year. So that the fact that Link has struggled, if you buy into Verducci's list, should not be a surprise. But those of us who have seen how Mike Link has done the previous two Aprils and can remember and think about how he has actually fared pretty well in his 2 years in Cincinnati, it may be a bit of a surprise. But if you take Verducci's red flag list into consideration here, then you know that it is not. Pitching leaders. Johnny Cueto leads the team in wins with 3, ERA with 1.39, and strikeouts with 22. Rolls Chapman is now number 2 in strikeouts with 21, although he's thrown a lot less innings. Oh, and by the way, Johnny Cueto leads the team in whip with a 1.052. That's for starters. Chapman's is around 0.7. Andrusik's is 0.909. That's where I'm saying sometimes the bullpen is a bad outing here, a bad outing there. The blown save by Marshall. People tend to think that the Reds bullpen has not been living up to its side of the ledger, when in fact it has done more than hold up to its side of the ledger. One of the questions coming into the season was the starting pitching, and as we have seen, the starting pitching has struggled this year. Of course, you can't point at Cueto, you can't point at Bronson Arroyo. Homer Bailey's kind of sitting in the middle. He's, you know, he's performed probably better than most of us had thought. So, on to May. Hopefully, it won't be another 11-11 month. Actually, it can't be 11-11 because the Reds have they have 29 games coming up. As I'm looking at the schedule, I have 29 games, including a stretch of 20 from the May 11th to May 30th. Their only off days next month are on May 10th and May 31st. Quick peek ahead. We know about the Cubs. Then they hit the 3 in Pittsburgh, 3 in Milwaukee, the off day on the 10th. Then the Nationals come in for a 3-game set from the 11th through the 13th. And I bring that up for a very good reason. The other night, we know that Bryce Harper made his major league debut. And on, as Dan Patrick refers to it, the mothership, on their show Baseball Tonight, the host of the show, Steve Berthume, was wondering aloud why the crowd out in Los Angeles booed Bryce Harper when he was announced for his first at-bat. The PA announcer even said, making his major league debut. You know, could it have anything to do with the fact that you put stuff about his major league debut ahead of things that were maybe a little more important than Bryce Harper's major league debut? Could it have been that? Could it also have been the fact that when we look at the bottom line, when we are watching anything in relation to your network, you even have the detail about a leaping catch? Do we actually give two squats about that? Do we actually really know how to take this kid? And he is brash. When we see him running the bases, he knocks his helmet off a la Sarge, and we see a mohawk, and then all of a sudden he abruptly stops. The reason why he gets the reception he does is because for the past 2 years, all we have heard about, despite all the immense talents Bryce Harper has, is that's all we've heard. Bryce, anytime you bring up a prospect, that's what we hear. I don't remember, I mean, I know there's been some ink in regards to Mike Trout, who was actually called up and made his 2012 debut the same day. Of course, you didn't hear quite as much stuff about it. Maybe it was because Trout went hitless. You know, Harper got his first major league hit, drove in his first run with a sacrifice fly. But they lost that game. Didn't hear too much about the fact that it was lost, even though that it was Matt Kemp that hit a walk-off home run in order to win the game. These days, with the way things are, as far as 24/7 news cycle, as far as social media, as far as cable TV in general, you can be overexposed within a 24-hour period. And that's what we have gotten with Bryce Harper. And we're actually kind of getting it now with Albert Pujols. Why do we need to know every hour how many at-bats it's been since Pujols hit his latest home run? Now, I'm sure there's a lot of Reds fans that revel in that. But why every episode, for lack of a better term, SportsCenter or BBTN, do we hear it has been X number of at-bats since he's hit a home run? He is only hitting X. You know what? You could say that it comes with the territory and him being as Albert being as high as a profile player that he is. But it gets to the point where you're just like, really? We got to hear about that 4 and 5 days in a row? As a matter of fact, one of the things that first things I saw on TV today on the mothership, Bryce Harper. Really? That was the most important thing that happened in baseball this weekend? You know, I'm not going to say the most important thing that happened in baseball was necessarily the fact that the Reds won 2 of 3 from the Astros. That's probably something a lot of people had expected. But I didn't hear a whole lot, if any, mention of Jay Bruce having hit a home run in 4 straight games. Didn't so much as see near as many replays of that stellar play from Saturday's game that Zach Cozart made, which some way somehow got beat out by Willie Bloomquist for the web gem of the day. I still don't, I still don't get it all. So then you're probably asking, well, Steve, why in the world do you pay so much attention to ESPN if you have such against it? Well, let me tell you why. For the most part, when it comes to the individuals that cover baseball, I've covered this before. I really like some of the a lot of the baseball guys, actually, that they have there on ESPN. And I'm going to take Barry Larkin and Aaron Boone and set them aside because they're both former Reds, especially Larkin. I just like the guys they have. I like Tim Kurkjian. I like Buster Olney. But first and foremost, if you want to qualify anyone as my guy at ESPN, it would be Jason Stark. That's one of the reasons why I watch anything baseball-related on ESPN. What we just have to get over here is taking the same story and rehashing it in different manners. As a matter of fact, they used numerous specials to rehash the NFL draft yesterday. No problem with that. Then why do I got to listen to it being rehashed again today? I don't know. I don't get it. I guess that's just another case of shining up the shield, if you know what I mean. And then sometimes, with that, you see social media jump in on this. Major League Baseball's Twitter. Only thing that I saw from them today, and I know they put out other stuff, was about Bryce Harper. The kid doesn't need any more exposure. He's going to get plenty of it through his play. We don't need to put him up on a pedestal yet. The kid doesn't even have 10 at-bats. We need to calm down about this. But about social media, you know, I think we have seen over the past couple of weeks that, you know, it can create a little bit of cruelty out there, whether it be at Twitter and Facebook. I bet you don't see it so much on Foursquare because it just doesn't provide such an opportunity, but mostly on Twitter and some on Facebook where people can be downright cruel. And you probably know where I'm going with this. You might be wondering, why aren't all the Reds players, why don't they all have a Twitter account? We know that there are some that do. Well, one of the reasons why they don't have one is because they see when I say you, I'm not meaning every one of you, how a group of individuals will treat one individual. And you know where I'm going on this. You know I'm referring to Matt Latos-wise, Dallas. I think it's completely insane that she has to get the comments she does in regards to his performance. It doesn't make sense. And then when you try to defend her, and she doesn't need defending, by the way, she'll stick up for herself quite well, might I add, you're accused of thinking that she is attractive, or you're just kissing up. You know, back in the day, and I'm a bit of an older individual, I will not be afraid to admit to such, and you don't see it much anymore, there's this thing called chivalry, where a gentleman would stand by a lady. Twitter is sometimes so the opposite of that. And it's true on Facebook as well. You'll see it on there. And we'll get to an example of that here when I get into a new feature I'm calling Rage of the Week. But you wonder why they don't get on there. Well, because they see all this stuff going on. No, sure, yeah, it's easy to click on, push a button on your iPhone, touch the screen for block. It is easy to do that. But by the same token, you shouldn't have to do it 20, 30 times a day, because people just have very little sense of how to be sensible. It's insane. They don't want them there because they don't want to go through all the BS that some of these other athletes go through. For example, I remember last year, the Reds were heading into St. Louis. A Cardinals fan referred to Brandon Phillips as the same thing he called the Cards from the season before, but this individual went a step further and proceeded to call BP's sister the same name. Brandon said, "You can call me that all you want. Don't drag my family into this." And something else. This is what I don't get. I get this part even less. You know, a couple years ago in 2010 when the Reds won the division, it was fun to follow Twitter and watch a baseball game. When they do something wrong, starting from the beginning of last season after they started out 5-0, till now, I almost don't like to. So you're probably saying, "Oh, good, we don't want you on there anyway." That's not the point. You can get some good information, especially from Joel Luckup, especially when the Reds are away, as to some things, statistic-wise. You can get those from people. You can converse, have a conversation with other Reds fans. But I don't get this, where two people use Twitter to conduct a fight. "I'll give you my address." Whatever. Whatever. That's not the point of even being on there. The point of the matter is this. Act like you got a little bit of sense. Just a minute. I'm going to carry on with this conversation just a bit more. Then we'll get to my Rage of the Week. So, here's the thing. It also can be kind of funny. Social media can. And how Reds fans can be fixated on the performance of former Reds. Of course, the big example to use there is Josh Hamilton. But it doesn't end there. It doesn't end there. No. There are people that think we need to know everything that Juan Francisco is doing down in Atlanta. Or even what Edwin Encarnacion is doing in Toronto. Were you not happy to get rid of him? I mean, because the majority of the comments that I saw from back in the time that Double E was here was he got treated about as well as for the last two seasons how Edison Volquez did. Now, I know there were some. I was a Volquez supporter on up to almost the day he was traded. I always thought, there's just something there. Then toward the end of last season, I was just like, well, maybe not. And I thought when he got traded, yeah, maybe it's the best. Do I care that Edwin Encarnacion has 7 home runs? Apparently somebody does. Apparently more than one person does. But were you not happy when he was traded for Scott Rowland? But back up. When the trade was made, you were probably glad to get rid of him. Then Rowland had the concussion issue. What about for the first half of 2010? Were you happy that deal was made? Yes, you probably were. And I know there's lots of people that look back at the Josh Hamilton deal and they think, what in the world are we thinking? But we've become fixated. We talk about what Juan Francisco's doing down in Atlanta. He's hitting under .230. He's got 3 home runs. Granted, Scott Rowland does not have a higher batting average, and he has 1 less home run. But we still have J.J. Hoover, who's pitched 3 shutout innings since arriving up from Louisville, who we got in the deal. Is there anything wrong with that? No. Look, as was pointed out by Matt today, the Reds have grown tired of Francisco's apparent lack of work ethic. That's why he was dealt. Braves needed a third baseman. Reds gave him one. He basically carries a glove around for no reason. He just has a bat. Now, rage of the day, and I'm sure that if you've been on Twitter and or Facebook today, if you know where I'm going. For some odd reason, first of all, big hat tip here to omgreds.com for this. Knowing that, you know exactly where I'm going. This past Saturday evening, my sister and I believe my niece as well, they had gone to my brother-in-law's sister's, bachelorette party, which they had at Great American Ballpark. They went to the Reds game. Afterwards, they went to the Moorline Logger House. Yesterday, my sister visited. She was just bragging on the place. The individual they had served them, the food, she said it was wonderful. Then I see, again, courtesy of OMG Reds today, that they had put an ad in Cincinnati Beat advertising themselves as Wrigley South. Now, upon reading some of the comments on Moorline Logger House's Facebook page, somebody had made mention of the fact that, well, you know what, when the Reds are in town, there are places up there around Wrigley that go out of their way to cater to Reds fans. Yeah, but do they call it Great American Ballpark North? Or Great American North? No, I don't think so. They probably put a sign that says Welcome Reds Fans or something to that effect. And I will disclose this to you as well. When the Reds, before the season began, I received an email to the Blog Red Machine inbox from a restaurant just outside of Wrigley, wanting patrons of Cincinnati to visit them while they were in town. So, it's really not an unusual thing. But it got me to thinking, was this just a huge misstep by the establishment? You know, if you read some of their comments on Facebook, one that here's a couple that I've seen. True and utter disgrace. I don't think I will step into your establishment again. One even said, apologize for the mistake, maybe offer a special for Reds fans this week and hope Red Country forgives you. Another one, this was my favorite. So, will you become Heinz Field number 2 to attract Steelers fans when they come to Cincinnati? Point of order here on that. June 5th through the 7th, the Pirates are in town, so you might be thinking PNC Park West instead. As of 11 o'clock this morning, they had 2,537 likes. Be interesting to see at that same time tomorrow morning how many likes they had. I think they had lost a few when I was on there last. One of the things that I saw on Twitter is people were wondering what the team's response would be, meaning the Reds. Well, I think we know one of the, it wasn't really a response, it was something that we have had heard of, so we're having a new blue zone for one of the games in the series this coming weekend, this coming week, rather, starting tomorrow. I do find it a little interesting that the establishment made two attempts to apologize. And this is from their Facebook page. It says, "Hey everyone, hold up a sec. Yeah, we admit it might have been a little confusing, but Wrigley South is a rally for our Reds. It's a chance to cheer on our Reds and give visiting Cubs fans a taste of what makes Cincinnati so special. We are Reds through and through, always and forever. We're not selling any old-style beer here either. We are exporting Cincinnati." That was about 3 hours ago, and it is currently 6 o'clock. So about 3 or 4 hours ago when that was posted on their Facebook page. I'll look at this. "It might have been a little confusing, but Wrigley South is a rally for our Reds. Sorry. In this case, 1-1 does not make 2. 2-2 does not make 4. It's 1-3 make a million. That's what it is." How anybody that remotely knows anything about baseball can take Wrigley and equate them to the Reds is pretty much off the rocker. They don't equate. And then if you read what OMG Reds had to say and they're about it today, kind of goes along with that. A couple hours after the one that I read, this came out. "Fans, we admit the upcoming promotion for the next Red series was unfortunately misguided with respect to message. We are truly sorry and apologize." Now, if they had just stopped there, it'd have been great. But it goes on. "And apologize if we offended any fans." Okay, right there is what I... They should have just stopped right there. Things would have been all right. But it goes on. "Our intention was to help cheer on our Reds and give visiting Cubs fans a taste of what makes Cincinnati so special, showcasing our great new riverfront and our city and to bring positive exposure to it. It was not intended to root for the away team, and we apologize if it was taken that way. We are Reds fans through and through. We are going to call this promotional event what it was truly intended to be, a rally for our Reds." You know, you could have done without the last part of that. Now, there's been somewhat of a battle on Facebook between those against and those that don't see any problem with what the establishment did. And that's all good. "It was not intended to root for the rain team, and we apologize if it was taken that way." I don't really have a problem with that particular line. Some people do. The last line, "We are going to call this promotional event what it was truly intended to be, a rally for our Reds." Well, why didn't you just call it that to begin with? If that's what it was truly intended to be, that's what it should have been called. You know, how about you piggyback off what the Reds was doing with the no blue zone and no blue zone 2? Oh, wait, you want to draw Chicago fans. Wait, let me look at the schedule. How many times are Cubs going to be in here, be in town? And I know those that don't see an issue with what was done here, the message they left on Facebook, they're just like, look, any business is going to do whatever they can to bring in new business, even if it's for just a temporary basis, which is fine. That's what you're supposed to do. Businesses are in business to make money. But this misstep will cost. Maybe more in the short term, and they'll get in the good graces in the long term. Me, personally, I'm not into this type of establishment when I go to eat. I'm just real. I haven't been for quite a few years. I don't have anything against the type of establishment it is. Well, maybe a little more now than what I did about 24 hours ago. But this is our rage of the week. Remember last week it was honoring the national champion Kentucky Wildcats? Yeah, remember that? Yeah, this is our Rage of the Week. Look, for me, apology accepted. I'm not going to go there anyway, because like I said, those type of establishment just aren't my cup of tea. Now, in reading some of the comments on Facebook, for those that say that place is usually packed before and after games by Reds fans, one of the worst things you can do is what some people are saying, alienating your fan base. I don't think they were alienating your fan base. I think it was just a misstep, and I don't think it was done intentionally. However, to apologize in the manner in which it was done, I don't think it came across as genuine. Especially with the last line, with the second post that you put, "We are going to call this promotional event what it was truly intended to be, a rally for our Reds." Like I said, you should have just called it that to begin with. One last thing here. Now that I've got on my soapbox a couple times this time. The winner of the Cincinnatitude shirt has been contacted. That did not sound right at all. Has been contacted via direct message on Twitter, waiting for that individual to get back with me. If I don't hear anything within a couple of days, there is a second individual I will contact. Once that I do get contacted, I will be putting out a tweet and putting out a post on Facebook about the individual that won. My name is Steve Engblom. I am the senior editor of Blog Red Machine. Hope you enjoyed this. Catch you again in a couple of weeks. And until then, go Reds. Beat the Cubbies. No Blue Zone.